Welcome, everybody. This is the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact. We're part of an organization called Rotary International, made up of a global network of 1.4 million neighbors, friends, leaders, and problem solvers in more than 46,000 clubs doing service above self, locally, globally, and in our case, also digitally. As a Rotary Club, we approach every conversation as we are on a shared learning journey. Our goal is to connect with and hear from fascinating, inspiring speakers, often with a message focused on the power of ideas to change lives and ultimately change the world. And also bring you a little inspiration that allows you to think about how you can make a difference as well. We're glad you've joined us and we hope you'll enjoy how we explore technology in the service of others. In this occasion, our guest is Emilio Nuzzolese, a forensic dentist, associate professor of forensic medicine. He is the head of the Human Identification Laboratory of the Forensic Medical Institute of Turin in Italy, and the co-founder, past president, and president-elect of the Association of Forensic Dentistry for Human Rights. Emilio is an expert witness in civil and criminal courts for dental and professional liability litigation, and will discuss how teeth are crucial to crime scene investigations and how they can aid in their resolution. We're really excited to have you here, Emilio. I'll hand you the mic, and welcome again to the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact.
Thank you, President Raquel. Thank you, Pat, for the presentation. I would like just to add also proud Rotary member and also proud Rotary member of this Rotary Club of World Impact. Thank you again for allowing me to share with you my expertise, let's say. I will entertain you for, about 20 minutes about the role of dentists within a specific field of justice and law. I will share with you this small presentation and to allow everyone to follow what for someone could be a new topic. When we think about dentists and dentistry, of course, we think about caries, we think about missing tooth, and so we go to the dentist for treating these kind of situations. We also think about a restoration, like a fractured tooth, and then a restoration done by a dentist. You think about dentistry, you think about this kind of course of treatments within your teeth, within your mouth. But there is another area where dentistry can be a valuable resource within criminal and penal investigation. An area where you have dentistry applied to law, dentistry applied to justice, a dentistry applied to investigation. In this, to this regard, we call it forensic odontology, which can be considered a branch of forensic medicine, forensic sciences, and of course, dentistry, with the purpose of collecting, examining, analyzing, and evaluating all those elements which are part of our jaws, which are part of our mouth, which can give some valuable, interesting, and important evidence for specific crimes of which, and also other type of investigation, like the human identification of human remains, which are related to the collection and analysis of dental data and dental treatment. So, I will focus this small presentation with you in this specific field of forensic odontology. I will not talk about another area of forensic dentistry, which of course is malpractice, or which is also dental trauma, after which you ask for a compensation. You have a car accident, you break a central incisor, you were transported in a taxi, you want to be compensated because you will have to go to a dentist to restore that tooth. Now, I will not talk about that area, which is more like an insurance area. I will talk about specific area of forensic odontology, also because forensic odontology itself is universal. You cannot talk about universality in legal dentistry because every country has specific jurisdictions and laws. We have common law countries, civil law countries. So the way we are evaluated within our our profession can be different between Australia, UK, France, Italy, Netherlands, etc. But forensic odontology is that field which is worldwide accepted and worldwide with a worldwide consensus, because the procedures I will just share with you in this presentation are universally applied in every country of our world. And the field which it relates to is human identification. And of course, we are talking about human identification of dead people, of course. And also bite marks analysis, which can be an evidence, I will show you. And also age estimation, which is specifically important for certain specific situations, like assess if you are a minor or not. So an odontologist, a forensic odontologist, can be appointed where there are human remains recovered because they are skeletonized, because they are carbonized, because they are fragmented, because there was an accident, a terroristic attack. Just remember what happens in the Hurricane Katrina, or what happens in the 9/11 terroristic attack, but many other natural disasters like earthquakes and also accidents of trains and flights. And of course, you need to identify human remains. Why? Because they cannot be recognized visually anymore, either because they have been skeletonized or burnt, or because they are fragmented, or be simply because they are skeletonized. And this can happen in individual single cases of recovery, but also in mass disasters, like the one I was telling you, a natural disasters like an earthquake, a tsunami, or a terroristic attack. Then we can be called because there are bite mark evidence on either a dead person or a living person who has been attacked. And this bite mark evidence could be useful together with other evidence to have some hints, some aspects related to the aggression and the perpetrator. Then we have the dental age estimation, which is relevant, first of all, for the human identification, because to identify somebody, we need to assess a generic profile, and the age of the unidentified person is part of this generic profile. But we also assess the age in living individuals. Like, for example, when you have to do a border control within countries and you want to be sure, or you want to assess that the migrant who is addressing himself, herself as a minor is actually a minor. And then the field of dental malpractice, which I will not talk to you tonight. So human identification is based on dental data. I'm sure that most of you, or all of you, go regularly to your dentist, and you know that we have a dental chart where we put down the treatments that we are doing. Of course, this is an example of a dental chart by any dentist. From mouth, as you know, we dentists can get a lot of information about your lifestyle, what you drink, what you smoke, if you regularly go to the dentist, if you have an oral hygiene. So we have a lot of information that we can obtain by inspecting, observing your mouth. Even from our patients, it happens like this. We have a lot of information of their habits and lifestyle. Then, of course, we have so many information about the dental treatments that we dentists have performed on a patient. And that information related to dental prosthetics, dentures, fixed crowns, restorations can be used for human identification, because it becomes a unique key of yourself. Anyone, we all have 32 teeth, okay, but imagine the cross information that we obtain by considering a missing tooth, a tooth with the restoration, a tooth with the dental treatments, but also, and I want to underline this, also sound tooth, also tooth without any dental treatments, as a specific anthropology and morphology of that crown, and can give us some ethnical information about a specific person who is not yet identified. Then there are, of course, age estimation. Now, why is so important age estimation? Because teeth, as you know, we have deciduous teeth, then we have a mixed dentition, then we have the permanent dentition. Then some of you must have faced the situation where they had to go to the dentist for the extraction of their of your wisdom tooth, most probably. And the wisdom tooth is a tooth that erupts and gets changes in the crown and develops the roots between the age of 16 and 22. So it's very important when you want to assess or have a confirmation if you are a minor or an adult, which is extremely relevant when we consider migration phenomena, because a minor is protected by the convention of the child. An adult has a different judicial path if they pass a border without a legal permission. This is to show you just very briefly how a tooth becomes so relevant and allow us odontologists to assess the age, simply because you start by a germ of a tooth, then you start by developing the crown of the tooth, then with the time, with the years, the teeth will develop crown and will develop the roots, as you can see here. And of course, depending on the stage of this development and maturity, we can assess your age, okay, within a margin of error. But of course, this allows experts in forensics to give a clue, to give an idea of the age within a range. When we go to bite mark analysis, of course, we think, are we really sure that today we still have people that bite themselves? Actually, unfortunately, bite marks for aggression or for defense are extremely still found. If you Google, if you go on a search and you go on the net and you put bite mark as a keyword, you will find so many crimes where you find bite mark and evidence. Of course, it is a very criticized evidence within the US and Canada as a source of evidence, but I will not bring you in that dispute. Nevertheless, bite marks remains a source of evidence within, not alone, of course, but it remains a very important evidence not to assess who is the author of the bite, but to give extra information, especially in the other criteria that we experts in forensic use very often, which is the exclusion criteria of a suspect, for example. Now, bite marks are shown like this. They are round, they can be bruises, they can be ecchymosis. You can see that basically you have some idea of the front teeth that caused the bite. But independently from this aspect, what I would like you to highlight is that actually bite marks are present and can be found in sexual assault, sexual abuse, domestic violence, child abuse, and of course, homicide. And this is the reason why, in my view, bite marks still keep a very important role within an investigation, because these crimes to a person are very important, and that is relevant for justice to get as much as possible evidence to establish who is the perpetrator. The other field where we work, because the human identification of unidentified human remains is strictly connected with the missing person phenomenon. Maybe you are not aware, but the people who are reported missing in every country are thousands. Thousands of people are reported missing every year. And unfortunately, some are found dead, and are found dead in a stage where the body, unfortunately, is decomposed. So you need to identify the person. Of course, there are people who voluntarily go away, and there are people who are disappeared for several reasons, because they have some mental illnesses, or because there is an exchange of organs, or because they've been kidnapped. There are so many reasons why a person could be missing. Just to give you a figure about US, it is estimated that over 4,400 unidentified bodies are recovered every year. And of course, this is related also to the phenomena of the missing persons. Every year in the United States only, over 600,000 people are reported missing. And of course, the problem is not related to the only to the missing and recovery of the people who are missing, but also on the aspects of identifying the unidentified bodies that are recovered every year. And on top of that, I will not have the time today, but just imagine how many thousands of migrants are still in the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea, and some are recovered and are still in Italy without an identity. And being without an identity is something that I will explain you very soon why it is so relevant from the point of view of the human rights and even from the humanitarian point of view. Now, just to recap, dentists and odontologists can count of panoramic X-ray of your mouth, periapical X-ray of your teeth, and other skull X-rays of your head, because maybe you have been treated with an orthodontic appliance. All these three X-rays are extremely valuable from the point of view of identifying you. And also, we have other very relevant information, like we take impression of your mouth, we have a dental chart with your information, and we can also simply start identifying you by a selfie portrait picture of yourself. To this regard, and I am going to the end of this small presentation, is the emphasis on the human rights and the identification of unidentified human remains. This is something I have been highlighting already 10 years now. It was actually Leuven, where I presented in August for the first time in the world the importance of forensic odontology, human identification, and respect of the human rights of the dead. Now, some of you have some legal or law background in your education, and you or others are just interested in the history and are well aware that human rights were actually published in 1948, because it was after the Second World War. And of course, they were issued basically because it was important to have peace between people after a world conflict. So they were related to living individuals. Now, one issue, the question is, are we a person? Am I a person because I am alive, or I am a person independently if I am alive or dead? And in fact, the issue is that we are human beings when we are alive and when we die. But if we are found in a decomposed status so that people cannot identify us, we will never have back our rights and our human rights, because we as citizens of this planet, we have rights because we have a name, a surname, and a date of birth. Without an identity, we don't have any rights. And from the point of view of the human rights of a dead person, start thinking about what funeral, what religious ceremony should I do to this unidentified human remains of whom I don't know the identity? What about the family who are waiting for their beloved to be back at a certain point, either alive or either dead, because they need to close the suffering and the mourning in order to close the suffering for the missing of a beloved one? And if you don't give a name to an unidentified human remains, you don't have a certificate of death. Now, I don't know about the jurisdiction and the law in your country, in each of you. In Italy, if there is a missing person in my country and we don't find a cadaver, let's say, to whom give an identity, the family has to wait 10 years to have a certificate of death issued for that missing person. This means that for 10 years, I cannot sell any property. I cannot obtain any insurance compensation. I cannot get married anymore. I cannot sell the car. I cannot at any funeral. And just to give you a wide view of what this can mean, not only from the human rights point of view, but from the religious point of view, from the insurance point of view, from the administrative point of view. And another aspect, which is somehow related to Rotary itself. When I joined Rotary because not only because I wanted to donate money, but I wanted to offer my time and my expertise to improve life and my community. And within this field, I loved the idea and I launched the idea in 2015 of offering pro bono forensic odontology consultation, creating a group called Forensic Odontology for Human Rights, which is now an association of over 100 members from over 30 countries who are available in case, let's just imagine what's happening in Ukraine right now. There are civilians who have been killed. And one day when this war will finish, I'm sorry for the responsible, but they will have to give account of the crimes against humanity. Because one thing is the war, one thing is to give a bomb on a hospital, on a civilian house, and kill civilians. Now imagine there is the need to identify human remains. And the association, AFOR, is available with their members to go on site and work pro bono. And this is why I also launched the gave the definition of what I call humanitarian forensic odontology, which is strictly connected with humanitarian forensics, which is you are available offering your time and expertise to respect and to prevent the violation of human rights. And this is just one of the articles where it's an open access article where you may wish, if you have time, if you wish to read something more about humanitarian forensic odontology. With that said, another aspect that another aspect where I emphasize a lot, and of course, I speak as an odontologist, so of course, I am a little bit, let's say, from this side. But I have to tell you that although forensic odontology can contribute to a positive identification on an average of 70% of cases, it is still not yet always applied in all countries. There are autopsies for the identification of human remains, where an odontologist should be appointed because there are jaws and teeth, and it could be appropriate to appoint an odontologist, but this doesn't happen. And unfortunately, my concept is that the failure to perform a dental autopsy and to appoint a forensic odontologist when there is the need to identify human remains can actually lead to a delay in a positive identification, which can be considered a violation of human rights. With that said, I thank you for your attention, and I hope I have somehow, let's say, an inspiring stimulator for any questions related to humanitarian forensics.
Thank you so much, Emilio. Great to have more insight in the application of dentistry for justice and law, and especially, and you added with the human rights at the end, by means of human identification, the bite mark analysis, and the dating of children or adults by examining the teeth. Looking forward to hear the audience questions. I saw some questions coming in. One of the first that has a question is Mustafa. Mustafa, can you ask your question, please?
Yeah, sure. So my question is, in any investigation that we usually hear comparing the dental footprint or the data record of the deceased or the person that cannot be identified anymore, does the dental print itself without any record from before can tell you who is that person is? Or do you need to compare it to a dental record that was taken from before so you can identify that person? And the second part of the question is, does the teeth or the tooth actually carry DNA that can tell you who that person is? Thanks.
Well, thank you, Mostafa, for these questions. It actually gives me the chance to widen a concept which is very important. And this is why I put so much emphasis in forensic odontology. DNA can be retrieved by the pulp of a tooth. So first of all, a tooth can be a precious source of DNA because it is also protected by the tooth. So you can find the DNA within the tooth of a person who is carbonized. It's ideal because it is being protected by the hard tissue of a tooth. And DNA, together with fingerprints and dental data, are the primary identifiers. No one should be identified only by a visual recognition. No one should be identified this way. To identify someone, you have to have a positive match of DNA or a positive match of fingerprints and a positive match of dental data. But among these three identifiers, dental data is the only data that allow investigators to have a preliminary, a generic profile, which cannot be obtained by DNA or fingerprints. This is why dental data is relevant independently from the position of giving a final definitive identification, matching, let's say, the dental chart of a missing person and the dental chart of the cadaver. Because at the very beginning, when you find an identified human remain, you cannot assess if this person is Italian, is French, is Spanish, because we travel every day from one place to another place of the country. I was involved in identification in Bari, where I am born, and the person was coming from Switzerland. And nobody was thinking, in actual fact, it was identified as the person who was missing in Switzerland. So dental data, independently from the availability of what we call ante-mortem dental data, is the first step because it gives you a generic profile. What I'm talking? I'm talking about age, sex, oral hygiene and alimentary habits. We can have some ideas from the geographical origin and ethnical aspects that we can obtain from the morphology of jaws, mandible, skull, but also the teeth. So with that generic profile, you already have a very important aspect within the investigation, because police can start collecting, sorting the people who are missing that are compatible with the generic profile that an odontologist has assessed. And this is why, for example, you should do a dental autopsy on migrants. It would be very difficult to get dental data from dentists from some countries of Africa, but you can still give an idea. And the third aspect is also what we highlight in science. In science, you have procedures. You can apply the procedure or you don't apply the procedure. But if you want to do best practices, you have to apply that procedure independently if this will give you an output or not. You either do it correctly or you don't, you see?
Thank you. Given the time, we have two more questions. The first one, Kelly. I think one of your questions was already
part of it. The first one I think was already answered. Emilio, you had mentioned that sometimes you go about conducting assessments on migrants to assess their age for like crossing the border. So how would you go about doing that? If someone crosses, do they bring like dental records with them, or you do it live?
I'm very happy, Kelly, also for this question, because it allows me to give you a lot of hints about this aspect. This is something, as you know, as Pat presented me, I share my life between Bari and Turin, where I work for the university. In Turin, it is very frequent to be called by police, because they have stopped some non-EU people without documents. And the age assessment that we performed within the Forensic Medicine Institute with Professor Giancarlo Di Vella, who is a medical legal doctor, is a combination of several age estimation methods, one of which incorporates dentistry. So we use forensic odontology in those borderline cases. Imagine you are 17 and a half or you are 18 and a half, because there is no method that will give you the date of birth, of course. Every method has a margin of error. But in a developing body, the wisdom tooth is the most important anatomical aspect that will actually change between 16 and the age of 22. And this change are related to the maturity and development of the wisdom tooth. So to cut it shortly to you, we do a panoramic X-ray of the, if necessary, of course. If we have, we don't do it automatically because it's an X-ray anyway. So if it is uncertainty, we do a panoramic X-ray in the hospital in Turin, and we observe the maturity and development of the roots of the wisdom tooth, which is of course then analyzed using several formulas that have been published by several colleagues who have done research in this field. And of course, we also adapt the criteria to the ethnical origin of the migrant, and we obtain a result. To make everyone like me, who loves human rights, serene, the output is always underestimating the age. So if the person is 18 or even 19, it will be most probably assessed as a minor, because there is the benefit of the doubt, which has to go through, that has to go to the minor age rather than the adult age, you see?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Given the time, we're going to go for a quick answer on our final question. Our guest, Joanne, has a final question. Could you share it with us?
Yes, I'm. Of course, I shut myself off. Turn the mute on. Anyway, I was interested in identification through the use of teeth from very ancient remains. Does your kind of profession get called in to say, okay, there's partial remains found, partial teeth, maybe a whole set of teeth? Are you called in to say, well, this person was X number of thousands of years old?
That's a very interesting question. You focused on another area where I like to apply forensic odontology, which is applying forensic methods also on ancient human remains. And if you search online, you will find a case where I worked with an anthropologist, which is, we will find it as the vampire from Venice, where practically it was an ancient remain of an excavation in Venice. And it was related to, of course, ancient remains. And we worked on that case. In that situation, you don't identify, let's say, the person, but you give some extra information about the biological profile. And for this reason, there is a wide area where forensic odontology is not yet, well established, which is forensic archaeology, as you said, which it could be a very interesting area, because you see, one of the aspects that we as odontologists can offer to any experts, from the archaeological point of view or from the pathological point of view is that we can offer X-rays. You see, dentists are the only doctors, of course, with the considering also radiologists, but dentists are the only doctors that can actually use radiologic devices. And this gives an extra resource because a forensic pathologist, an anthropologist, another medical doctor without the specialization in radiology cannot use equipment that uses X-rays. While we have a portable, for example, X-ray, I have a portable X-ray, and with a digital sensor, I can perform periapical X-ray in any site because the portable is battery operated, the laptop is battery operated. So sometimes I bring everything on site and they don't have to do anything. They don't have to move the human remains. I do my assessment on site to such an extent that I can add, we also start as University of Turin, a concept called virdentopsy, which is a virtual and remote dental autopsy without being on site.
Thank you. So given the time, people, thank you all for being here. Emilio, thank you for your presentation. For the people watching or listening later on, you may be hearing this on your favorite podcast service, watching it on our YouTube channel or viewing it on a club's website. If you're viewing it on the club's website, please scroll down a little bit more to find the discuss section. Here you're welcome to leave some comments on what you think of the program, and also to reply to other people's comments. And this is one of the way that we as an online asynchronous club can collaborate and share ideas together. So that being said, I would like to thank Emilio again for being here with us, teaching us. And I want to ask you, Emilio, do you have one final word to say as a closing of the meeting?
Well, first of all, thank you for allowing me to highlight another aspect, which is a sad aspect because the field I work is not really a very happy field. Unfortunately, we have to deal with people who have not an identity, but it is important that it is something that as a community, as an association, as Rotary, can still be important because people are really suffering when a person is missing and there is no idea where this person is. So identification and identity is really important also for the respect of the human rights.
Thank you so much. And with these words, thank you, everybody. See you at our next presentation.